Hey everyone, welcome to tonight's call. Let's get the show on the road here and talk about, there it is, the science of weight loss. So we're going to get into some kind of nuts and bolts stuff, which I think I like to kind of geek out on this stuff once in a while. You know, I think at the end of the day, you don't need to know this, you know, to lose weight for sure. But again, we always want to hit it from all angles, right? And so the more you know, the better you can act. As going with this saying, right? Do the best you can until you know better. Then when you know better, do better. And so that's really what this is about. It's kind of just looking at things from a different angle. And so that can be really helpful sometimes. So kind of an overview. Again, a lot of this material is from The Hungry Brain by Stephen, I think it's Guyonnet, is how you say it. I'm a big fan of this guy. Pretty smart fellow. So it's interesting because, again, what he's really referencing is a lot of scientific studies they've done on things related to weight. And that's always helpful. You know, at this point, again, this is so important because a third of all deaths right now among older U.S. adults are linked to excess weight, right? And so what I will say here, and I think this will become evident as we go through this training, you know, you really have to start thinking of the body as a system, a complex system. Sometimes we think of weight so simplistically, but if you're overweight or obese, it's affecting lots of different systems of the body. There's increased inflammation. There's unbalanced hormones. You know, certain organ functions, you know, aren't optimal. You know, your digestive, you know, the system there is a little off. So again, we can't just look at just weight as being this separate thing. And I think that's becoming more and more obvious not to do that. But again, that's why this is important. So again, these are some of the topics we're going to cover, the evolution of your brain. You can see what they are. We're going to talk about them right now. So let's get to it. So we'll start with the evolution of your brain. And again, this is really interesting because I think what I want you to do learn from this is to appreciate you're not a bad person. You know, so often we tend to take our struggles as character flaws. And I think this information here really proves that, you know, there's a bigger picture going on. So again, right, the human brain's evolved over more than 500 million years. Right. So there's a process of evolution, and it's easy to forget that, right? I mean, the last 50 to 100 years have been so bananas compared to the previous, you know, million years, that we can forget that stuff sometimes. So basically, you know, real simple, and you've heard me say this before, but there's an evolutionary mismatch, right? And so what that means is where a lot of the traits you have now and a lot of the desires and cravings you have now don't match up with the environment we're in. Right. So we crave sugar in a natural environment was fine because, right, there wasn't a lot of sugar around. To crave it now when we're bombarded and surrounded by sugar, right, is a big difference. So again, we're working against something here. And literally, you know, if you've ever, they call it opportunistic voracity. And literally, we are hardwired to overeat because, again, in history, everything's about survival. And so if all of a sudden you came across a bunch of food in a unpredictable food environment, you could eat tons of it. And so there was a story in the book where they were trailing around this hunter and gatherer and just kind of watching what he was doing. And they were just blown away by how much he'd eaten. He'd made a kill. And so he started eating a lot of that meat. And then when he was walking back, he came across a bee's nest. And they said, you know, he just ate like a quart of honey, right? And so again, what he was consuming, because it showed up, you know, for him, is that he was able to way overeat. And so again, I think we tend to think of eating in our, from what we know, right? And so again, we're surrounded by food. So sometimes we wonder, you know, how come I can just eat so much sometimes? Well, again, it's built into us, you know, on a certain level. And so we need to learn how to manage that. And so to the brain process that he references, the kind of the system one processes, and this is your unconscious mind. Right, so we talk about the unconscious mind, and he refers to it as system one. There's a Nobel Prize winning psychologist who came up with that, and I'm blanking on his name. It's Kahneman, and he referred to it as system one, system two. And so here's the thing, right? Our unconscious mind, these processes are older evolutionarily in our brain, and they're instant, right? They're fast, effortless, intuitive. And we're not really aware of them. Okay. So that's kind of the one process that we know about. And then the system two process, which again is our conscious mind, where our prefrontal cortex, again, the newest part of our brain, it's the more slow, effortful, it's the rational, right? Logical part of your brain. And so, again, a lot of times what we feel when we're trying to change our behaviors is we're almost kind of always playing catch up, right? So it's like our unconscious mind is kind of triggering us to do these unhealthy behaviors, and we're trying to stop ourselves with the slower part. Okay, so it's important to recognize this was going on. Now, of course, what we're always looking to do is we're looking to influence this unconscious part of ourselves, and we can do it. Okay, but again, I share this with you because it's just more proof that trying to change your behaviors consciously, you're not wired for that. Okay, it's not really set up for that. So, again, information alone typically is not enough to substantially change behavior, because it doesn't target the primary brain circuits that are in charge of calorie intake. Okay, so a lot of the things that are influencing your hunger, your cravings, how much you want to eat, is really unconscious. Okay, doesn't mean we can't influence it, by the way, because we absolutely can. But to just try and rely on willpower, it's just not an effective strategy. Again, it's kind of like bringing a knife to a gunfight. Our unconscious minds are so powerful, and they're working so quickly, that to try and, you know, stop it with our conscious mind, it just doesn't work. Okay. And again, that's evolutionary thing. So we want to talk about food reward, right? And so we're kind of changing the way we look at this. So, you know, basically on an unconscious level, we place value on different foods. And a lot of this is evolutionary. Okay. So again, when you're thinking about evolutionary, by the way, you're really thinking about survival. Right? That's how it works. So whatever trait a creature had that would increase its chance of survival, that trait would tend to get passed on. Okay? And so when we look at our brain over time, it evolved to have traits that were going to support our survival or give a better chance for it. And so food reward is really one of these things. And again, it's less about flavor and it's more about the calorie content. Okay, so again, you have to remember that for most of our history, food was scarce or at least unpredictable. Okay, and so having all this deeper brain circuitry dedicated to food and being hungry and eating as much of it as you can when you could increased your chances of survival. And so that's what we inherited. I mean, that's what we're walking around with, but the entire environment has changed, right? We're kind of geeking out here a little bit with some of the details, but it can be helpful to understand this stuff. So dopamine is a brain chemical, and it's called the learning chemical, right? Because it reinforces desired behavior. And so as an example, it increases when you're eating higher calorie foods, again, increased carbs, fats, or sugar. Okay. So these are higher calorie foods in nature. And so as soon as you're eating them, your brain starts getting flooded with dopamine, and it kind of hardwires in that says, okay, think about this. Remember this, when you can get this stuff, again, this is where the high food reward is. When you have an opportunity, carbs, fats, or sugar, you know, again, your brain literally starts changing. And so when it gets it, it starts releasing lots of dopamine. And when you're not getting it, it starts restricting dopamine, which causes your attention to narrow down and focus on those things, right? So you've probably felt this before. Right? This is a typical diet thing where you stop eating the quote unquote wrong foods, and now your attention goes to all those foods. Okay. So there's something going on chemically in your brain that's causing that. Our brains use about a fifth of our body's energy, right? Even though it's only 2% of our body weight. So again, and a lot of that is our prefrontal cortex. Our conscious mind uses a lot of glucose, a lot of energy. Right? And when we're hungry, our bodies, they're not craving healthy food, right? So again, I want to shift your paradigm here a little bit. Your brain is literally motivating you towards concentrated, quick, easy calories, okay? So after you've been living on this culture for a little while, your brain learns, hey, if I eat, you know, pasta, if I eat bread, if I eat muffins, if I eat sugar, those are dense, concentrated calorie sources. And again, your brain is still back in the evolutionary times. And so when you get tired, when you're hungry, or when you get tired, when you're low on energy, your body starts triggering cravings for less healthy foods. Okay. So again, how do you manage that? You got to balance your energy more. You see what I mean? So again, a lot of what we're going to be talking about is preventive. We want to prevent the problems. Okay. We don't want to get really hungry and then fight against it. Sometimes we have to. But again, the smarter solution here is to not allow ourselves to get really hungry. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. So why do we overeat, right? At this point in time, there's something he referred to as supernormal stimulus, right? And so this is simply when a species' innate preferences are overstimulated by presenting a cue that's more powerful than what the species has evolved to expect. So simply what that means is if you look at foods that we are now surrounded by, a candy bar, right? This has been, again, in nature, right? How are you getting sugar, right? Again, some of the main sources of it are fruit. Okay, again, it's a temporary sometimes thing. And even in that fruit, it's bound, all that sugar is bound to fiber. Okay, so it's not as concentrated. It's not as, your body doesn't absorb it as quickly. Okay, and so what we have now is we have these superfoods, these engineered foods that are literally appealing to our brain's natural desires, right? To look for sugar, to look for fat, and to look for these fast, easy to absorb sources of calories. Okay. And again, this supernormal stimulus, our brain doesn't regulate to it. Okay. And so our brain just seems to love, you know, again, a candy bar would be supernormal stimulus, right? Compared to a piece of fruit. Right. And so our brain doesn't regulate that. It's just like, all right, you know what I mean? Lots of this is great. Our brain likes supernormal stimulus. So the next thing is this supermarket diet. Now, this is really interesting because for a while, you know, when they were studying obesity in rats and mice, the big trouble they had initially was they couldn't get them to get big. They couldn't get them to get overweight because they had this kind of natural homeostatic, you know, ability to say, oh, okay, they've eaten enough. And so they stumbled upon it by a guy had brought, you know, he brought his food into the lab one time and he found that the mice didn't stop eating. And I forget what the specific food was, but so anyways, long story short is that they started using the supermarket diet because when these mice and rats were eating super palatable human foods, again, it doesn't have to just be human, super palatable foods with a super normal stimulus, the mice and the rats just kept on eating. Way past the threshold, way past any equilibrium that they'd had before. Okay. And so, again, when we look at supermarkets, that's how I want you to start thinking about it, right? These are literally, these supermarkets are filled 70 to 80, 90% with supernormal stimulus that, again, it overpowers a lot of our brain circuitry. Okay. Food variety has a powerful influence on our calorie intake. And the more variety we encounter in a meal, the more we eat. Okay, so again, that's just one more factor. We all know this from Thanksgiving, right? All those different options. And so again, I'm sure you've experienced this. If you eat one type of food, you tend to reach a satiety point a lot quicker than when there's lots of different types of foods. And again, if you think evolutionarily, it kind of makes sense, you know, because again, the more variety we eat, the better. And so it's almost like the variety seems to reset us a little bit and reset our hunger. So hunger is not just this absolute thing. It's malleable. And again, if we get really hungry, if we hit starvation mode, you'll find that your ability to way overeat goes way up. And we'll get to that in a moment, because again, that's dieting. And then sensory specific satiety, right? When we get full from one type of food, but still want to eat a different kind, right? So again, that's really what it's talking about. That typically if we eat one thing, we'll tend to hit a level of satiety quicker. But then if we have other options of flavors, again, it resets us to a little bit. And again, the buffet effect, right? And so again, this isn't about stopping it necessarily, but it's about really, this is about awareness. And so if you go to a buffet, if you go to when you go to a party and everyone brings food, and I'm forgetting the word for that. When you go to Thanksgiving dinner with lots of different options, okay, understand that you're putting yourself into a situation where it's very easy to overeat. And so again, just be aware of that. So here's a few shocking statistics, right? Fruit and honey were only sources of sweetness for most of history, right? So that's kind of interesting. And now though, you know, in the 1870s is when sugar really started to become widely available, right? So again, the sugar graph, I don't have it here today, but it's fascinating because again, we just take sugar to be this, it's just assumed that it's just this thing that's there, but really it's been about, you know, a little over 100 years, right? 150 years. It was never around, you know, wars were fought over sugar. It wasn't a common thing. And so it's important to remember that because it's so ubiquitous. It's just so everywhere, and it's so omnipresent that we just assume that it's fine. That's naturally happens. It gets normalized. And so it's important to remember that, no, this is a very processed, unusual food, right? And without trade, without the modern world we have, you wouldn't be eating as much sugar at all. So in 1922, right, this is interesting. We consumed the amount of an added sugar in one 12-ounce can of soda every 5 days. Okay. Now we consume that much every 7 hours, right? Think about that, right? That's a crazy number. You know, food ads for foods we've eaten before trigger a dopamine release and trigger craving for that food. So remember that when you're watching TV, again, on a deeper level, it's not just hypnosis, it's not just influence. It's hard to avoid it, because if you're in a bad mood, if you're hungry, if you're tired, and you're watching food ads, it's literally influencing your brain chemistry. Okay, so be aware of that. In 2012, the 10 largest food and beverage manufacturers spent $6.9 billion on advertising. Right? So I'm going to assume that all of you on this call here understand that advertising works, right? Whether we want it to or not, it has an effect. And I think that number really points that out, right? Because these are companies and they don't spend money unless they're making money off of it. Okay, so that's what I want you to pull out of that is really these food and beverage companies are really just like cigarette companies, right? And don't say, well, I got to eat, so I don't know what to do. We don't have to eat these foods. You know what I mean? They're just like the cigarette companies. And again, their health effect really isn't too much different. So again, they're spending tons of money to manipulate us. Fast food restaurants spend $4 billion. Think about that. Right. So again, imagine, you know, because it's interesting. Imagine if there was no fast food advertisements, right? Imagine if they went like the way the cigarette ad. Again, you'd have so much more control, you know. So it's so manipulative and so cynical, you know, how they do this, because they're literally manipulating people, you know, to get addicted to these foods. And again, our consumption patterns can be influenced by counter marketing. Okay, so this is what I like to do is when I see. Again, I really watch as little commercial TV as I can, right? So again, there's a real argument to be made to get a DVR and record your stuff and watch it there, to get Netflix, to get, you know, Hulu or whatever, to get these entertainment options that have no commercials. These commercials are messing with our head. They're literally programming us, okay? So that'd be the first suggestion I have for you is to limit, you know, again, try and get your entertainment commercial free as much as you can. When you are, you know, when you have to watch one of these commercials, what I like to do is I give myself some facts, you know? So again, if I'm watching like a McDonald's commercial, I'm really kind of analyzing how cynical the ad is and what a bunch of crap it is. If I'm watching a Coca-Cola ad, the same thing. I mean, take your stupid names off the cans. It's so manipulative. And again, we've talked about the past, you know, the enemy and just how, again, it's just like the cigarette companies, right? When you think about cigarette companies, most people get real, oh, they're bad. They're, you know, but then when we think about soda companies and fast food companies, we have this warm, fuzzy feeling. Okay. You got to change that. These guys are not your friends. They're your enemy. Okay. And so when you see these ads, I want you to respond the same way to them as if you did see a cigarette ad now, right? You get mad. What if you saw a commercial for heroin, right? You get irritated, or cocaine. You get mad about it. And so I want you to feel the same way when you see these ads from these fast food and you know the ads. Okay. So top six calories set sources for adults, right? This is 2010, right? So again, I don't know how much this has changed, but I imagine it's probably similar. Number one is grain-based desserts, right? And again, they call them desserts, cakes, cookies, donuts, right? Muffins, croissants, rolls, all this stuff, right? They add up, right? Because again, we're get to in a minute, they're calorie dense, right? We think, oh, they're kind of small. They're not that bad, but they're dense. They're dense. Okay. You don't get that calorie density in the natural world. Yeast breads. Okay. Chicken and chicken mixed dishes, soda, energy, and sports drinks. Imagine that. I hope that makes your stomach turn, right? Imagine soda, energy, and sports drink being the fourth source of calories, right? Alcohol. Right, and pizza. Okay, so now again, this is America. The calorie sources for adults. How does this happen? It happens through advertising, through conditioning. Right. It also part of it. You know, it's easier to eat this stuff. It's addictive. You know, that's a part of it as well. Okay. But the biggest part of it is the way you think about it. And so this is why I suggest, again, you don't have to stop eating these things, you know, but you got to start looking at desserts as desserts, right? You know, cakes as desserts, obviously, donuts as dessert. And you don't have to stop eating, but you got to cut them down. You can't be eating them multiple times a day. You know, if you're going to take your weight and your health seriously, you just can't. And the soda, energy, and sports drinks, you got to work to eliminate that to zero. There's literally no reason to be drinking those, right? And alcohol, again, you know, you want to limit it. All right. So let's talk a little bit about calorie density, because this is really important. And I think this is really, in my opinion, this is one of the secrets to losing weight for good in a way that's relatively comfortable. Okay. And so basically calorie density is a measure of calorie content of a food relative to its weight or volume. Right. And so the lower the calorie density of the item, the more satiety it produced per unit calorie. Right. So this is kind of interesting, because again, this is how we consume less calories while still feeling full. And that's the, you know what I mean? Like that's the holy grail of weight loss is how can I feel full and still lose weight? Right. Well, this is how you do it. So again, foods that contain more food volume make us feel more full, even when they have less calories. So a big part of what makes you feel full is how much space the food takes up. Your stomach has stretch receptors. And so as your stomach fills up with food, part of that stretching is part of what makes you feel satisfied. Okay. So if you eat, just for example, 200 calories of vegetables is going to be more filling and satiating than 200 calories of cookies, because it takes up more space. And so I think this is a key thing to understand, because I think a lot of times people think, they think like vegetables aren't going to fill them up. And it's just that does it. It's not scientifically, that's not true. Okay. Again, there's an aspect to this is mental. You know what I mean? Like opportunistic veracity. A part of this is there's a mental aspect to this. Okay. So it's important to start looking at this as I want to eat larger volumes of food that are less calorie dense. Okay. And again, you know, a lot of modern foods combine properties to make the foods less filling per calorie. Okay. So understand that. Like, marvel of food science. They always reference this is like those Pringles potato chips. Cause you put those in your mouth and it's like, they practically dissolve, you know? And so I'm getting into that stuff right now, but again, you're eating them. You're eating them. It's addictive to eat them, right? The process of eating them feels good. It's hitting all these little bells and whistles in our brain, but it's not satisfying. It's not nourishing you, all right? So let me. I want to save this to calorie density just to give you a real clear idea of what it is. So this is the equivalent of 500 calories in your stomach, right? So oil is very calorie dense, and so you can see how little of it is equivalent to 500 calories. Cheese, nuts, and butter. Right? Much more calorie dense, takes up less space. Potatoes, rice, and beans, right? It's kind of right in the middle, right? So it's taking up a little more space. Lean meat and fish, and then fruits and veggies. So again, you can see that fruits and veggies, it's less calorie dense. So you're eating all that. It's filling you up like that. And yet you've eaten half the calories, you know, of something that's really dense, like a cheeseburger. You know, so again, that cheeseburger, or you could eat all those fruits and vegetables. And so it's not just about which one's better for you. It's literally which one's going to make you feel more full and satisfy you more. You understand? So here's a food density table. And of course you can Google this anywhere, right? But this is a good way to start planning your food. If you're tired of feeling hungry and you'd like to eat better, because what do most people do? They try and eat less, right? But as soon as you start eating less, you start kicking into yourself in a starvation mode. And when you kick yourself in a starvation mode, it's very difficult to control that. You know, again, when you kick yourself in a starvation mode, you are changing your chemistry. You're changing your brain, literally the way your brain's operating, your brain chemistry. You're changing your hormone levels, and everything starts triggering you to want to eat as much as you possibly can. So again, we don't want to starve ourselves. What we want to do is we want to eat foods that satiate us and make us full, but to have less calories in it. Okay. And so here's a list you can start to use. And look at the difference, by the way, right? So fruit and vegetables, right? Calories per pound, right? The high end of the vegetables is 200, right? I mean, the high end of the starches and rice is 500. And then you compare that to junk food. You know, we were talking about like 2,300 calories. Okay. So it's a five times, you know, it's a five time increase in calories for the same amount of food size wise. Okay, so foods that make you feel full. More palatable food, the less filling it was. All right, so understand this, that the foods that we're surrounded by now are hyper palatable. They make them hyper palatable primarily through salt, sugar, and I mean, that's kind of, salt and sugar is the main palatable things. Fat's a little different, and fat's a brain thing. So your brain wants fat, and so it recognizes it. But palatability really is salt and sugar, the main things they're using. Palatable foods are those that the brain intuitively views as highly valuable. And the brain is really good at removing barriers to their consumption. So I guess, you know, what I'm saying is, what you want to start to train yourself to do, at least somewhere in the day, is to eat some less palatable foods. It's to say bland, natural flavors, right? We got to get rid of that stigma that bland is bad. It's not. You know, not every single thing you put in your mouth has to be fireworks. You know, let a meal or two. Again, I'm a big fan of breakfast and lunch being this way. Let those be just kind of blander foods, natural flavors. It conditions you to like those foods, and it literally changes the foods that your brain starts to crave. Right? The more fat food contained, the less filling it was per calorie. Okay, when high fat foods aren't calorie dense or highly palatable, they provide the same level of satiety per calorie as high carb food. Okay, the more fiber, right? Fiber is really one of the secret weapons as well. The more fiber food contained, the more filling it was. Fiber, I believe, this is my theory. I think fiber is one of the key things that's been removed from our diets. And I think it's a big problem. Again, in terms of it, we're hungry a lot. Because less fiber, the quicker we just absorb it, we get through it. Okay, the more fiber, the more it sticks in our body, and there's a lot of benefits to it. Okay, so adding more fiber into your, and natural fibers, okay, not like powders or some sort of supplement, but foods that have more fiber in them, beans, right, are a great source, and there's a lot of other ones. Protein content. Okay, so this is legit. So when people talk about Atkins or keto, the aspect of eating more protein, it does help create satiety. Okay, and so protein content is a key one. So fiber and protein, if you start adding that more into your diet, you're going to be less hungry typically. You're going to feel fuller and satisfied longer. Okay, that has been shown to be true. Foods that cause most satiety, right? So here's just a list of some: potatoes, eggs, oatmeal, beans, fish, meat, Greek yogurt, nuts, and popcorn. Okay, so these are the ones that have shown scientifically to cause the most satiety, right? It kind of satisfies the most. All right, so keep these in mind. And again, you can Google this, you know, and find a list, of even more. But again, this is kind of somewhere where you can start. So real quick, I just want to go through, you know, a few steps for a slimming lifestyle, right? Kind of knowing everything we just talked about. So the first one is kind of fixing your food environment, right? And so I like this idea. Get rid of tempting foods. You don't want to be surrounded by them, because on an unconscious level, we know if there's Ben and Jerry's in the fridge. We know if there's potato chips on the counter, you know, and it just makes it harder. Okay, so again, fix your food environment. Spend some time and do that. It makes a huge difference. Reduce exposure to your food cues, right? So just real simple. Even if, you know, again, it's a little bit better, don't leave stuff on the counter. Okay, that's an absolute no-no. Do not leave chips, bags of chips, cookies, breads, all the rest on the counter. At the very least, put them away. Okay, it's not the best thing in the world. Your mind still knows they're there, but it's better than always looking at them. Okay. And again, create barriers to eating. So one of the ones I use for ice cream is, I'll eat ice cream sometimes, but I'm not going to have it in the house. And so what I'll do is, if I'm going to have ice cream, I'll go and, they have like these single serving cups, right? So I'll get something like that. So again, I have to get up. I have to go get in the car. I have to go to the store. I have to get it. I bring it home. I've got one serving. I eat it. Okay. So there's a bunch of barriers there to eating it. If I got a gallon of ice cream and left it in my freezer, that's the opposite. You're reducing the barriers. Okay. So fix your food environment. Next one, again, we kind of referred to this earlier, is manage your appetite, right? This is kind of that preventative idea. We don't want to do the dieting thing where we're trying to starve ourselves. It doesn't work. If you try starving, you know this, you've done it. You can starve yourself for a little while, but then what happens is you start kicking your, and it's not just your hunger, right? So hopefully now you understand, you're restricting dopamine. You're focusing unconsciously. You're getting yourself fixated and focused on unhealthy foods. Your cravings start cranking up through the roof. So I don't want to do that. We want to manage our appetite. And the easiest way to do that, again, is choose foods that send a strong satiety signal, right? Foods that satisfy you. Foods that have lower calorie density, but higher protein fiber level. Okay, again, beans are, that's the one I discovered last year. And the salad I eat at lunch now is, it's the most satisfying meal that I've found. And I know because I used to eat, it was a piece of Ezekiel toast, avocado, an egg, and salsa, right? And sometimes an apple too, with peanut butter. I would eat those things and I would be hungry in the afternoon. I eat the salad now, again, 6-7 different vegetables in it and a ton of, you know, chickpeas and some walnuts in it. And I'm satisfied right to dinner. Okay. So again, plan your foods out with what we've talked about here. Regular physical activity, you know what I mean, is also helpful, you know? So, again, it supports a healthier appetite. Beware of the food reward, right? Brain values foods that contain calorie dense combination of fat, sugar, and salt. And it sets motivation accordingly. This motivation is partially dependent of hunger, right? And that's what's amazing about this. And so you'll be able to read this bottom part too. When we eat simple foods that are less dense and closer to their natural state, they don't have that rewarding edge that drives us to overeat. Okay. So this is coming down the pike. I think I didn't get too much into the whole leptin thing, but one of the implications of some of these studies is that the type of food you're eating. So if you're eating a hyper palatable diet, you know, kind of supermarket food, very processed foods, it's literally affecting your brain's ability to track your leptin. And leptin's real important to know when you had enough to eat. Okay. And so basically this, I'm simplifying this by a lot, and this hasn't been proven 100% yet, but the theory so far is that eating hyper palatable foods is causing your brain to not recognize the leptin, which is another way to say it's causing your brain to become blind to when you've had enough food to eat. Okay. So literally, and again, it doesn't have to be all the time. I'm not saying never eat good food again. I'm saying make a good part of your daily diet. Just again, I'm saying less palatable, right? As if that's abnormal. But it's a natural flavors, right? No salt, no sugar, right? No oil. Do you know what I mean? Like natural foods in their natural state. And so if you can get a meal or two, again, I'm a big fan of breakfast and lunch, you know, Monday through Friday being as natural as possible, you really are training your brain to recognize when you've had enough to eat, right? And so again, it's a very, very good strategy. Next one, again, sleep, right? Sleep, we've talked about this a lot, but sleep needs to become a priority because there's just so many effects that sleep has on your body in so many ways, right? So restorative sleep is an important cue for the non-conscious brain that has a major impact on performance and eating behavior, right? And you've heard me mention this 1,000 times probably, but the study that showed that subjects consumed 300 more calories when sleep deprived, right, than when they got enough sleep. Same people, same environment, but they consume 300 more calories when they were sleep deprived. And again, it's not just because when we sleep properly, our executive functions, our prefrontal cortex is stronger and more able to say, no, don't eat that. But then also bottom up, our body is running more efficiently. Okay. And so our body's not craving these unhealthy foods as much. So again, it's a twofer, that you're not craving unhealthy foods, and you have a stronger ability to direct your behavior as well. So sleep is key. Moving your body, right? Obviously, it increases the calories you use, but also physical activity helps maintain an ideal hormonal environment for weight loss. And so, again, looking at this more than just a bank account where calories in, calories out, the hormonal activity in your body and balancing them, it supports your body burning fat more effectively. But the other side of it is that a more balanced hormonal hormones in your body, it reduces cravings for unhealthy foods. Okay, so a more balanced hormonal body supports healthier eating naturally. Okay, so again, that's I want you to think about that a little bit deeper, a little bit more layers to this whole thing. And then finally, managing stress, right? So identify chronic stressor you feel you can't control, right? So if there are stressors in your life, identify them. That's the first step. And then you begin asking the question, you know, how can I deal with this in a better way? But a lot of times the first step is just becoming aware of it. So again, if you feel like you're a stressed person, make it a priority to deal with it. Okay. It's going to support you in so many ways, you know, and weight loss and health is just one of them. All right. mitigate the stressors the best you can. Again, when you become aware of them, the first thing is you avoid those situations that kind of, you know, cause the stress in the first place. And then you add in, you know, habits and routines and behaviors that help to lower the stress, help you release it actively. And again, practicing mindfulness meditation is just one way to do that. Right. But again, going for walks, taking a hot shower or bath, reading a book, knitting, you know, there's tons and tons depending on who you are, what you find relaxing. But again, you want to actively manage your stress because again, just like the sleep, it's a twofer. You know, the less stress you are, the more energy you have and the easier it is to influence your behavior, and the less stress you're feeling, typically that's going to support healthier food cravings and choices. All right. So again, we covered a lot of stuff here, but what I want to do, and this is just kind of taking a step back in terms of weight loss, the more you can understand this whole process, right? So again, I've mentioned a couple times, a lot of times people's just kind of counter or their kind of intuitive approach to losing weight is I'm just going to stop eating, right? So hopefully from what we've talked about here, you realize that's not a good idea, right? It's really setting you up for failure. Okay. And so again, hopefully this here, the more you understand this, the more you appreciate, okay, there's a lot of levels to this whole process, which can feel a little daunting at first, but the good side of it is that it doesn't just rely on sheer willpower like you've tried doing in the past. It's really this strategic, layered approach to creating the body and the health you want. Okay. So great. So I hope you enjoyed that. If you have any questions, you can write them in here. And yeah, so we got back to normal here too with the audio. So I hope that's good. Yeah, scary about the supermarket diet stimulus, right? Isn't it crazy? I mean, that is so crazy to me. But it's really true, you know? And so again, it's, you know, and here's why the reason I wanted to talk about this so much is that sometimes, again, we just tend to say, well, I can't control my eating. And then again, we think it's a character flaw, something wrong with us. And so there's not anything wrong with you. I mean, there's literally, you know, things are engineered to get as addictive as possible. And then again, all the advertisements support that as well. And so it's not about there's something wrong with you. It's about really seeing it for what it is. And I really think like it, there you go, Connie, you said the thing with the cigarettes, right? It is a good analogy. It's literally the same, by the way. In the 80s, the big cigarette companies, because they knew, they saw what was coming down the pike with the cigarettes, right? Because everyone was catching on. They couldn't keep saying the cigarettes were healthy. You know what I mean? Like what was coming down the pike was obvious at that point. So what the cigarette companies did is they bought a lot of the food companies, the big food companies, and they used the exact same tactics they'd used with cigarettes. So literally the food companies and the cigarette companies are the same, right? Now they might have divested now a little bit, but for a good 25, 30 years, they were literally the exact same company. The companies, and again, I mean, I'm the big ones, there were cigarette companies. And so, again, what really led to declines in smoking in America anyways, was not that people all of a sudden got a bunch of willpower. It's that they looked and understood the cigarettes differently. They appreciated how dangerous they were for them. They understood how manipulative the companies were. And so again, I want you to appreciate that. I swear, I believe the same thing is coming down the pike for these food companies. I think there's only going to be so much time that they're going to be able to pretend that their foods aren't causing disease and death. Not to sound dramatic, but overeating these foods is causing disease and death. And I think there's only so long to be able to get away with it. And I think people are going to look at these foods, again, these fast processed foods and sports drinks and sodas and all this stuff. And I think we're going to look at them just like cigarettes. So don't wait. Start doing that now, because that paradigm shift of looking at them differently will support you in being able to make healthier decisions. Okay. Pat says, yeah, they're putting nails in our coffin and laughing behind closed doors, you know, absolutely. And, it's literally the cigarette companies, you know, they don't care. I'm not gonna go so far as to say that they're evil and they want to kill us. I think they just, you know, again, it's a profit motive. If they're making money. And so, you know, that trumps, you know, people's health and happiness, but yeah, they certainly don't care about your health, and they go out of their way to prevent you from learning the truth. And, yeah, it is what it is. So Carol says, this is frightening, explains my counterproductive behavior this week while away from home. Yeah. Now listen, Carol, right? This is all about expectation. When you're away from home, And especially if it's a new place and it's kind of unusual, you know, lower the expectations a little bit. And here's the thing, right? When you're at home, you're on track and everything's going well, great, right? You want to support that. Sometimes you just kind of fall off track a little bit. Sometimes you're, you know, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm away from home and I'm doing something a little different. In those situations, another alternative for you to be, again, you want to be as healthy as you can be, but when you can't be as healthy as you really, really want to be, you're not in your natural environment, and there's a lot of challenges in your way, you can also use a lot of energy just to kind of observe how your body responds. If you start eating some sugar, how does my body respond to that? If I start eating more junk food, how does my body, my cravings, how are they influenced by this? Okay. So what I'm saying is you put on kind of your observer hat. So again, we want to utilize everything because the last thing we want to do is beat ourselves up because that just, there's no benefit to it, right? None. And so when we're not acting the way we ideally want to, right, we tend to say, okay, I want to beat myself up. I feel horrible about myself, all the rest of it. But another alternative is to say, okay, let me pay attention. I was like that when I went on vacation a couple weeks ago. I wasn't doing the healthiest stuff. And so I was okay with it. Again, I know it's a week. It's not a big deal. I've done it plenty of times to get back on track. However, what I was doing while I wasn't living the healthiest, I was paying attention. And I was noticing I was drinking less water because the water was crappy there. Okay. And so I said, okay, I got a new strategy. Next year, I'm bringing a Brita, you know, a pitcher filter, and that'll fix that. My water will be up where it is. But I didn't drink as much water as I normally did. I didn't beat myself up about it. I could have gotten myself to go get bottles of water or jugs of water. I just didn't. And so what I did instead is I paid attention. Okay, I'm not going to drink as much water. It's not the healthiest thing. Let me see what effect that has on me. And what effect it had on me is my mouth was dry a lot. My knees were, my legs and muscles, I just felt a little crampy. I wasn't as comfortable. I felt hungrier, right? I found that my hunger started to spark and I was hungrier than I normally am. I was craving unhealthy foods. Again, I was eating crap anyways. So again, when you're not in the ideal place and you're not living the way you ideally want to, remember, again, you always want to kind of be somewhere there. Don't let it go too crazy, you know, but also pay attention to how it feels. Okay. And you're programming yourself. I always use the example, like I push the record button. So when I'm not drinking a lot of water, when I'm eating kind of crappy food, I press the record button in my body and in my mind. And I say, how does this feel? I want to remember this feeling because I don't like it. Okay. And so you can do the same thing. So you're utilizing the mistakes that you may make. Okay. Chicken. I understand the mixes. Yeah, Connie. How about this one? Chicken is more fattening than beef at this point. A lot of people don't know that. Chicken 100 years ago was not. Chicken was a lot leaner 100 years ago, but they have engineered chicken, right? So that the fat content's higher. Why? Because fat, again, I didn't get into this too much, but salt and sugar light up our brain in a different way. They light up our pleasure centers. The fat lights up our brain a little bit differently, and it's not through a flavor, but our body knows when we're consuming fat, and it wants us to consume fat. Why? Because again, there's more calories in it, and again, it's a survival thing. So yeah, that's why chicken, you know, is a fattier meat now. so yeah. No, I don't mean takeout chicken. I mean chicken in general. Yeah, it's a lot fattier than it used to be. And then they breed it that way on purpose. So Jolene said, I get so angry that these companies can continue to get away with manipulating us with food that's engineered for us to overeat. I have spent so many years being frustrated with and beating myself for eating, overeating, right? It's annoying. And so again, I share this stuff with you because I want you to get mad, right? At some point, I can't tell you how many people have quit smoking because they're so pissed at the cigarette companies. You know, so again, utilizing anger is not a bad strategy. We utilize anything we can, but these companies are literally, again, they'll trade your health for money, just like the cigarette companies. So again, when you reframe these foods as cigarettes, it's very powerful. And I know it can be scary. It's like, oh, I'd never eat that again. You know, but it is what it is, you know? And so you can eat this stuff once in a while, like Ben and Jerry's, by the way. And this is just one more level of this. This isn't really, it's a little bit off the track, but what's really interesting about a lot of these food companies is that the same companies that own like, what was it? I'm a little blank on this, but let me think. The same company that owns Jenny Craig owned, Auntie Annie's Pretzels and Cinnabon, I believe. And, then the same company that owned Weight Watchers owned Ben and Jerry's. So I'm not sure. I think they've sold now. These companies are always changing stuff. But the point is that the same companies that own these really crappy fast food places and engineered foods are the same companies that own the diets. So again, if these diets really worked, if they really had your best interests and hearts, clearly they would not be buying them. You know, I can promise you, right? No fast food company is going to be buying me, right? My company, they wouldn't let me say this stuff, you know? So, anyways, yeah, we got to get mad at these guys and, cause they deserve it. They're scumbags, you know? And again, it is what it is. So if you look at the truth of it, it's going to affect your decisions. And that's helpful. So kind of writes, I recently heard that our emotions come into our awareness before our thoughts. Just recognizing that can help me realize I don't need a sweet treat. Here's the thing. And I hear you, Connie. I hear them switched around so many times, you know, which comes first, the emotions or the thoughts. I literally was just going through a training today and I want to share it with you because I thought it was really profound. But then the cognitive behavior therapy is kind of the same thing where it's like their theory is the thought first and then the feeling. And so I don't know, but I will say this. At the very least, the feeling can happen and the thought catches up to it. You know what I mean? And so again, that system one, system two mind. But either way, right, is that what we want to do on a deeper level is to create a thought and a feeling about certain foods. Okay. So for example, if I say, again, we're talking about these fast food companies being like cigarette companies, what we're doing on a deeper level is we're unconsciously reframing how we think of these foods. A lot of times we'll look at like, I don't know, I don't want to pick a food here, but I'll say Ben and Jerry's ice cream, right? So we said Ben and Jerry's ice cream and it's like, okay, I got to stop eating it. But unconsciously we're like, oh, I love that stuff. Okay. So what we ideally want to do is we don't want to just stop ourselves from eating it, right? Because that's a willpower based exercise. What we ideally want to do is we want to reframe the way we think about that ice cream. And there's a lot of different ways we can do it. One of the ways is saying, oh, you know, Ben and Jerry's is owned by Unilever and they literally put people in fMRI machines and feed them ice cream and watch their brain pleasure centers light up and they figure out the exact amount of sugar is going to make it light up the most. And so it's so manipulative and it's just like a cigarette company that may influence the way you think about it, right? It may give you a little bit of distance. You can look at the sugar content, you can look at the ingredients of it. And so that thought about what that food is instantly is going to affect your feelings for it. Right. So again, yeah, I don't know. I swear I'm at a point where I don't know if the thoughts or the feelings come first. At the very least, they're so we can change either one. We can change our feelings and we can change our thoughts. And so I say we do both. And one of the easiest ways to do that is to reperceive these foods. And we've talked about it before. You can look at the ingredients and study what those do to you. You can look at the company that makes it, right? Maybe that affects you. And again, it's socially irresponsible. And maybe that bothers you and causes you to not like it and changes the way you feel about it. But at the end of the day, we want to change the feelings for it. And so, you know, again, there's a bunch of ways to do that. I hope they're made accountable for type 2 diabetes. Yeah, me too. And that's what I think is going to happen. And you know what, though? Type 2 diabetes is the strongest, I think, cause-effect link to it. But I think what we're going to find out is they're going to come out and realize, oh, it's also heart disease. It's also a lot of cancers. And so I think it's even going beyond the type 2 diabetes. But I think type 2 diabetes is probably where they'll start. I think we're getting it. But again, it's the whole thing. And so I hope they're held accountable for it. And I hope people are made aware of it. Turkey. Yeah, typically turkey seems to be a lot leaner, right? Because it's not as mass produced a thing as the chickens. Okay. So again, this stuff all changes so quick. I was blown away when I learned about the chicken thing. You know what I mean? I'd never heard that, but, again, we don't hear about lots of things, right? That's part of what they do. Good point about our emotions. Carolina Leaf has several great books just on that. Oh, Carolyn Leaf. I'll check that out. I don't know her. So I will look at that for sure. Connie, where do I volunteer for the Ben and Jerry's testing? Well, I'll tell you. Okay. So here are those scumbags, right? So they did that testing and they put ice cream in their mouths and they watched their pleasure centers light up. And that allowed them to create ads that said ice cream now scientifically proven to make you feel better, to make you happier. Right. So it's a war. It's a war. It's literally drug dealers. They're drug dealers. They're cigarette companies. And that's what they are. So again, you have to keep, that's what I was talking about with counter programming. Every time you, again, you don't have to take the level I do. I suggest you do. But every time I see a McDonald's ad, every time I see one of these Mountain Dew ads or any of these things, I'm in my head looking at it like as if there was a heroin ad on TV. What would you do? What would you, if you saw a heroin ad on TV, you know, some guy's having a bad day and his friend comes up and says, you know what, man, you just need some heroin, shoots him up. And like, what would you think? Right. You wouldn't just sit there and be like, oh, passively, you know, oh, yeah. You'd be like, what? What is this? This is it. And that's what I'm like in my head, because it's all bullshit. It's all bullshit. And it's just, it would be just like if the cigarette companies, and they did this, you know, if you ever study ICE cigarette advertising, it's fascinating. But they used to have ads with doctors talking about this was the healthiest brand of cigarette. Right. But so imagine if a cigarette ad came on now and said, oh, you know, this is the healthiest cigarette to smoke. Right. You'd be like, what would you do? You wouldn't just passively watch. You would actively counter market it. You'd be like, what? And so that's what you need to do, you know, in terms of these, you know, these commercials that you're constantly, you know, seeing. And like I said, the first step is to try and minimize as much as you can. And the next step is to kind of do the counter marketing. All right. So Pat Rach, you're right about the thought first, but we don't recognize it till we feel the emotion. Yeah, right. So again, I mean, which one comes first? I don't think that's even as important as knowing that you can change either one. Remember, how do you change the emotion? You change your state, right? So if you want to change the emotion you're having, you can change, you know, again, if you're like, okay, I really want ice cream, and you're kind of knee deep in that craving, one of the first things you can do is shift your state, right? Do a break state. And so one of the ways to do that is you check your posture, you sit up straight, you kind of let go of the tension. Hold on. Do I want this ice cream? Let me take a step back. You kind of disconnect from the state, change the feeling. And then you can go into the psychology. So I'm a big fan of, I think, again, if you want to do, the quickest thing you can do is instantly go after the feeling, right? So you go into the state. Whew. Okay. Let me feel healthy for a second. Let me feel calm and relaxed. Do I really want that ice cream? Is there any other options here? Right. Now, again, sometimes it's right to choose the ice cream, but sometimes it's right to not choose it. Okay. And so you want to put yourself into a more calm, relaxed, centered state to make that choice. Right. That's my opinion. And then obviously you do some of the mental work as well. Okay. So super. What do we got? Connie writes, I knew it. Ice cream rules, right? Yeah, it does. Again, here's the thing. And this is where I swear I was going to do a whole lesson on being a hypocrite, because sometimes you'll hear me talking about sugar and it's like, oh, I think about like cocaine, but I eat sugar sometimes. I don't do any cocaine. So it's like, on one hand, I'm so dramatic with it. I'm thinking it's like cocaine, but then sometimes I do it. So, you know, I remember I did a lesson one time called the gray space paradigm. And I think there's something to be said. I think you have to be that way when it comes to food. Because we don't want to give up ice cream forever, right? We don't want to never eat cake or, you know, all this good stuff. We want to eat it sometimes, but we want to ask ourselves, what gives us the highest quality of life? And I believe the answer to that question is when we can eat these foods sometimes and enjoy them, but we still have the body, the health, and the weight that we want as well. And you really can have both. The secret is that you eat less of that stuff. You eat differently, right? And I'm an example of this. You know, so again, I ate ice cream last night or the night before. And so, again, I don't eat it very much. I don't want it very much, you know, but sometimes it's a treat. That's what it's for. And that's what I was getting at with the sugar. It's so around us so constantly, it's been normalized, you know, overconsumption of sugar has become normalized and it feels normal. And when things feel normal, to eat less of it feels abnormal. You see what I mean? So again, it's very, that's hypnosis, you know? And so again, to all of a sudden eat less sugar feels like, oh, it's weird. It's not weird. You know, that's natural. So we have to reset, you know what I mean? Like our measurements, and we got to way reduce what we think. Again, that's why I give you that stat from, that was crazy, right? I mean, let me see what that was. Let me just remind you of it one more time here. Cause this is crazy. It's a crazy stat. There it is. So yeah, in 1922, 1922, right? So we're talking about 100 years, over 100 years ago, we consumed the amount of added sugar in 1 12-ounce can of soda every 5 days. And now we consume that much every 7 hours. That is bananas, right? So again, it seems normal because that's the culture we live in, right? Because there's a huge sugar lobby, but it's abnormal. And so that's one of the first steps is changing the thoughts around it, reframing it, and that'll help you you know, consume it the way you want to. Yeah, Ray Connie. So you're right. Remember the ads for cigarettes when you were a kid. Now, again, there's one more, and we tend to forget that. I was thinking about this today. When I was growing up, people kind of knew cigarettes aren't that good for you, but cigarettes and cancer were not directly linked. Because I remember my mom was smoking. I was probably like 9, 10, 11, whatever. And me and my brother, we said, you should stop smoking, stop smoking. So we knew it wasn't good. But we never said, stop smoking, you're going to get cancer. Because it wasn't, you know what I mean? It wasn't as direct of a connection. You know what I mean? So again, the cigarettes are, it's really interesting to think on that. And that's what I think the same thing's going to happen. Because as soon as that connection was absolutely fact between the cigarettes and the cancer, that's when you start to see the rates go down in America anyways. And, the shitsters, they still are selling more around the world because there's less anti-smoking awareness, in other areas of the world. And so that's where they sell their cigarettes, their death sticks, right? Connie, yeah, I got down to 150 this week. Hey, congratulations, Connie. Super, right? That's awesome. So I'm glad you shared that. So congratulations and good job. You put a lot of work into it, and so you deserve it. And the thing I know your situation, your story, and the best part about it is that you were patient with it, you know. And so I think you've put in lots of effort and action into it, but you've done it in a patient, sustained way. So I'm super excited for you because I think again you're going to realize that getting the weight down that way is much more long lasting. And so again, I say to all of you, remember that, be patient with it. There's no rush. Begin to change the behaviors in a way that's comfortable and sustainable, and feels good. So, all right, everyone, thank you very much for being on the call here. I hope you enjoyed it. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you all next Tuesday night. Good night, everyone.